listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, we've got a good car cast for you today. We're going to talk about just a little recap of Indy 500, the winners there. Some news about Ford Mustang Mach-E, some supercar stuff, and a little update on the horsepower number for Goldberg's Dodge Charger twin turbo car. But before we get started, I want to welcome a new sponsor, Oracle NetSuite. America's ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle. It's the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR inventory, e-commerce, and more, all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny and give you the ability to compete with anyone and work from anywhere, even on your phone. Join the 20,000-plus companies who already trust NetSuite. And NetSuite has surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies that they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide. It's called 7 Actions Businesses Need to Take Now. So get the free guide and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/carcast. Get your free guide and schedule a free product tour now at netsuite.com/carcast. That's netsuite.com/carcast. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the Motorator D'Andrea, with Bill Goldberg. How are you, Bill?
Vroom, vroom, vroom. I'm telling you, man, I never thought I'd be that guy, but we're going to have to get a turbo sound in that intro.
We're going to have to go. Well, once you get the charger done, we should have... sounds from that charger, and then we'll do a new version of the whooshing sound. But it's got to be on the street, because I don't like it on the dyno, because you hear too much dyno, right? So we got to get sounds of that on the street. We'll do a new intro sound for that. Well, speaking of, it's time for Dodge Power Dollars. That means for each horsepower, you get $10 off your purchase on a Dodge Charger, Challenger, or Durango. So come in for Dodge Power Dollars today for a pretty sweet deal. All right, so getting into some news, big weekend, Indy 500 with no spectators. It was a good race, a couple of crashes. It seems like everybody is okay. It was an interesting race. I would say the end of the race was less than spectacular if you got to watch any of it, but basically, it was the top three. We have our friend Graham Rahal came in number three. Scott Dixon, who led most of the race, came in number two. And Takuma Sato, he wins it for the second time. He wins an Indy 500. And a great day for Rahal Letterman team. We're obviously good friends with Bobby Rahal. I see him at Long Beach every year. He's been here to the shop. And Adam Carolla's Porsche 935, the Paul Newman 935, after that, the very famously, it was in the Apple computer livery. That was Bobby Rahal's car. He was the driver as that. So he came here and saw the car. So Graham Rahal and Takuma Sato are both Rahal Letterman. And so that team took a first and a third, two cars on the podium.
Awesome.
Fantastic for those guys. I believe there was a crash four laps or something like that. I don't know exactly what lap it was on. It was bad. But they had to make the decision, do we red flag it and then race the last three laps, or do we yellow flag and the races end at the yellow flag? And they chose to yellow flag it. So whatever the order was when the crash happened, that basically was the race. So a little bit less than spectacular. I would have liked to seen a little sprint at the end, because I was watching it and going, hey, you know, I know the 1, 2, 3 guys are a little bit separated and they've only got four laps to tighten, the grouping. But under a yellow, if they get a green light or if they red flag it, then they're bunched up again. It's really going to be a sprint. So it would have been exciting to see, but I understand, you know, this is the way it works and this is racing and everybody's fine with the results and it is what it is. But
not everybody was fine with
well,
it.
Well, not everybody's fine with it.
By any means.
I always think
that crash was unbelievable.
The crash was unbelievable. Yeah.
I mean, the technology in these cars to withstand that impact on that wall at that speed was it was just unbelievable. And he just walked out of that car. It was a testament to what they do.
Yeah. He did wobble a little on his way out.
Well, there's no doubt he wobbled.
Yeah, but he certainly.
Out. But I mean, he was still put together, man.
Hit the wall and then spun, and then just as bad luck would have it, hit right on the end of that wall, like into pit row. Now, they have the tire barriers and whatever at the end of that, but when they were talking about it, I think it was Paul Tracy was on the mic, and you know, him being a racer for such a long time, he's like, remember before we had the tires, I forgot who, I'm sure somebody knows, said somebody else hit it and split the car in half, and like half went down pit row and half went down the track, and this is kind of where we are. And yes, talk about the canopy or the halo system on those cars, had to have been a huge benefit, definitely some protection for the driver. Probably some structural integrity around the cockpit of driver. If you look at that crash and you look at the aftermath of it, you see how much damage to the car, but not a lot around the driver. You know, even when we build cars for the street and you look at all the crazy crash testing that happens, you do notice how the car is supposed to crumple around and absorb the impact around the cockpit, but pretty amazing, exciting race. You know, a little disappointed that they weren't able to do it in front of spectators. I know the guys on the podium. I know Sato, and you know it was great for them and great, you know, to see it on TV. But not the same without 300,000 people screaming at the time. You know, listen, you are one of the few wrestlers to be able to do some of the biggest events in the day and then actually do the in the studio, no audience wrestling. So you know what it's like to have, you know, 60,000 or so people screaming, and that's what that live show is all about, right? Then Indy 500 is just a live show.
It's a huge difference. It's why you do. It's one of the main reasons you do what you do, because you're there to entertain. It's a competition you have with yourself to be the best that you can be every time. But ultimately, you're out there to put a show on for people. But I mean, this has been the normal for the last number of months, and we got to kind of accept it, move on, and then you know when the gates of hell open back up again, we can all address it at that point. But yeah, it sucks, and it's amazing to see during this time how some sports can prosper and some sports, you know, really fall by the wayside when they're presented in front of no fans.
Yeah. Well,
how did you think? I mean, there are a lot of things you can watch, like hockey, for instance. I'm watching the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm a huge hockey fan.
Yeah.
To me, I don't miss the fans not being there. I really don't, because it has everything to do with what's going on the ice. It's such a fast paced game, and the announcers. So if they're great announcers, sure, and the action's awesome, then you forget about that other aspect being the crowd. But in racing, it's different, man. It's a lot different.
I think it is. I think more about the people that are there. I think more about the people playing. I think. I did watch a little bit of hockey the other day as well, and you know they've got this sound going on, like in the building, you know, da 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 da, you know, charge, and like they're doing it to, you know, to I get it for the TV coverage, and for what we see, you don't really miss the audience. That's fine, right? Because the TV coverage is fantastic, and you know they're doing it, I would imagine, a little bit better to not show the stands missing or anything, you know, grandstands empty. But I think about the players. I think about the drivers at Indy. I think about those guys that really and wrestling as well. I think about them that really kind of perform to an audience, or wrestling more so than you know, racing. But the sound and the feeling of that audience there, what does that do to them? And look.
Well, ultimately, the biggest thing is how hard they've worked their asses off to get to the playoffs, to get to the Indy 500.
Yeah.
You know, and then what's the payoff? The payoff is you win or lose, right?
Yeah.
But the payoff usually is also the experience. And so, yeah, you can look back on it and go, yeah, I was part of a race with no fans there. But you'd much rather say that, yeah, man, that was one of the most spectacular experiences of my life, because there were 300,000 people there. It was an unbelievable, you know, the sights and sounds. It's just, it's a shame for the people that are having to perform.
It will be. It's funny. It's going to go down. It's going to go down as this Indy 500 will go down in history as something very, very unique. About everyone's going to be like, oh, you remember the year we didn't have spectators. And then next year, God willing, everything goes, and we are allowed spectators, it's going to be the biggest Indy 500 party of all time.
Ever.
It's like they're already talking, going, oh, it's going to be nuts next year, especially with the ownership with Roger Penske. He's already put $15 million into the facility alone. And at the end, when you saw the car go up on the big elevator, which they just
that was wild.
Which they just did. Fantastic. Having the amount of people, the amount of coverage that you're going to see, it's going to be a huge party.
And how many millions of dollars did they spend on that? And they did that for the spectators.
They did that for the spectators. Yeah, right. It ended up being great TV coverage. It ended up being great for Bobby Rahal. And we saw David Letter up them with his insane mountain man beard, trying to wear a mask with that crazy beard hanging out the bottom of it. He looked like a lunatic in that thing.
Oh man!
But Letterman was up there on the podium as well. But anyway, it was an exciting race. It was fun to see. Congratulations to those guys, to Graham Rahal, Scott Dixon, and Sato. It was fun.
32 into the corners, man. Really?
Oh my gosh, these guys were.
I mean.
Qualifying and some of the lap times they were putting down, and it's just fantastic on what they were doing. All right, so also in the news we've got is Ford Mustang Mach-E, which it's too bad Alistair's not here to do the news for us.
Exactly.
On the Mach-E.
We ought to have Chris.
Chris should.
We need audio.
We need a sound drop.
Anytime you say Mach-E, you ought to have Alistair's audio come.
Yeah, we should have Alistair's audio come up. Alistair's been at Willow Springs doing more testing of the Corvette C8. He's been posting on his.
Did they not sell razors at Willow Springs?
I don't know. I don't know if you saw his comment, but he had like three pictures of the C8 and then like a selfie on him. And I'm like, why is the what's with the image of the tired, sweaty Brit up there? And he's like, I'm taking one for the team, man. It's like 110 degrees out here, and they're doing their track day, but just constant filming and stopping and testing and filming and stopping and testing. And it's just, I was up there for a summer event, and it is brutal.
Could have been down in South Texas with the roadkill guys throwing dirt up everywhere at 110 degrees.
So yeah, I heard they're in the area.
Everybody's suffering.
Yeah, well, they're all having fun though. They're all having fun. The Mustang Mach-E, as you guys know, the all electric Mustang, similar to Bronco and similar to Ram TRX, everyone's doing a launch edition vehicle. And the Mach-E had pre-orders available on the Ford website, and they immediately sold out of the launch edition. And then Ford just announced they're going to offer more orders available for the launch edition. And it's kind of interesting how they're doing it is they have partnered up with some other sites like Uncrate.com and Spotify, and you'll go to their websites through these partner programs and order it there. And I don't know if they're all going to be the same. The way I understood it is Uncrate, their car, they're going to have a limited number of the launch editions. And I think they're going to be gray with the black interior I think red calipers. The gray is like carbonized gray. It'll have the black upholstery. I think it has like red stitching. Now, I don't know if that's unique to all of the launch editions or the ones that will be available at Uncrate. So it's just, I don't know. I kind of like the idea. I like the idea of partnering up with these guys. It's the one you get is the 346 horsepower, 428 pound-feet of torque. It's the dual motors. It's the 270 range, 270 whatever. It's estimated. And it's $59,960 for the dual motor version, you know, almost 350 horsepower. And I'm wondering, like, is the Spotify version different, right? I don't know.
Exactly. Just using them as a conduit to get the same vehicle.
You know, you must remember this. I don't know if they still do it, but, you know, for a long time, I think it was like over the holidays, Neiman Marcus would do a high-end special version of a car. They would say, hey, you know, the new Maserati Gran Turismo is coming out, and it's $120,000, but for $165,000, you could buy the Neiman Marcus edition, right? Mm-hmm. And it's got, you know, some new stitching, and it's got this and that, a few options and colors that you wouldn't normally be able to get, and there's a premium on it. You order it from the Neiman Marcus catalog. You know, so this is sort of Ford's more kind of everyman version of that, partnering with, you know, maybe not super high-end fancy brands. This isn't a Neiman Marcus thing, but this is, you know, this is Uncrate, and this is Spotify, and it fits more of the audience. So I kind of like that idea. Also, I like the idea because there isn't like a Spotify markup. You know, you still get the car for $60,000. It's not like, mm-hmm. hey, the Spotify version is $72,000, right? This is
that would bite them in the ass.
Yeah, because we don't really need to do that. And
no.
The benefit for these brands, of course, is co-branding with Ford and Ford co-branding with them. So it's mutual to drive some traffic to their site and allows these guys to, I don't know, maybe collect some email addresses. It's business, right? You collect some email addresses and say, welcome to Uncrate. You can unsubscribe if you want to, but thanks for coming by. Get on the list for your Ford Mach-E launch edition. And this is also what we do. It's kind of win-win. That's what we do. That's just the nature of business.
How, like in a presentation, do you say, yeah, man, I got the special edition Uncrate? You know, Ford. I mean, there's no relation there. So, I mean,
there isn't. But like we're saying, it's not an Uncrate.com branded version of the vehicle. It's just the destination you're going to order it, and it's a way to introduce some customers to that company, right? That's all they're really doing. Look, you know, Spotify is doing a bunch of podcasting, and they got music and all kinds of stuff going on. They want to bring some people there. And part of their marketing campaign is everybody always reaches out and goes, how can we do something more creative? How do we do, even on a podcast, we want to do different kind of live reads and integrated segments and have a guest on the show and blah, blah, blah. This is just a version of that. This is just them going, hey, yeah. And I'm fine with it. That's what business is. Hey, we're here doing a show. We love doing the show, but there is still a business behind this. So anyway, more Mach-E first editions are available, and as of today, as we're recording this, and I'm sure as you're reading this, there are some available. So if you didn't get the opportunity to go to Ford.com and order up what you wanted, you can still do that. Now, I don't exactly know if they're going to do something with Bronco as well. The Bronco first editions, I believe, are sold out. And I don't know if they're going to be able to do something like this. Now, it seems like if this, you know, temporary little pilot program does well, no reason why they couldn't do something cool with Bronco as well. By the way, be like, hey, go to the REI website, right? Or, you know, and order your Bronco, order your first edition Bronco from them, or whatever, you know, something along the lines of that. So anyway, there's a few out there. Have you seen the everybody loves the new 911?
Oh, yes. Damn it.
And Turbo S is out there. We love the Turbo S. And then they did Turbo S first, and then they released the Turbo. And then they released the Targa. And I had commented on social media, I think to Edmonds or somebody, and I said, great, love that they've got the Targa, but I'd like to see a Targa GTS with a manual and the center lock wheels. And the comments were, I don't know, seems like a really small audience. But then a lot of people were with me and going, yeah, but they did that last year for the previous generation. And in my book, the GTS is one of the better looking of the cars. And the reason why is top up or top down, it's fine. But I do like the, you know, the aluminum bar that goes across. And if you really look at the rear glass on the Targas is a single piece of glass for the back and then curves down to the side. So it's almost like the quarter windows and the rear glass are all one piece of glass. Mm-hmm. And there's no pillar cutting them in half. So the rear visibility is nice and it gives it a really nice look. In my opinion, I think it's one of the best looking ones out there. And the GTS has always been the most kind of bang for the buck when you're optioning out a Porsche. Porsches are so a la carte with their options. You can jump into a price point and get into the Turbo S range, or you can option up whatever, the Carrera or the 911 4 or whatever, the 2 or the 4. But the GTS was always kind of the nicely optioned versions of any of the cars, Cayenne, Macan, you know, I always like those. And when I saw the previous gen, the Targa GTS with an optional manual, and the GTS had the center lock wheels, which is only on the GT cars and the Turbo S, yes. I thought that was kind of a neat feature. So I'd love to see a GTS Targa, but we have a GT3 coming out. We have a GT3 RS, and the spy shots of the GT3 RS are pretty sick. It's got like some RSR bodywork on it. It's a cool looking.
It's beautiful, man. Quit understating. It's a beautiful car. They did a beautiful job.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, everyone's getting nutty with the wings these days. We saw the. We talked about it a little while ago. We talked about the AMG GT Black Series or whatever, Black Series GTS something, and with the crazy wing and all this stuff. Actually, we talked about it because the sound wasn't quite there for a flat plane crank V8. We're like, it's kind of missing the sound a little bit. But the crazy wing, and the GT3 RS Porsche looks badass. The wide body, the vents, what they're doing on the hood. And it's got a little like RSR kind of bodywork to it. It's pretty wild. It's over the top. I'm curious to see.
It's got attitude, man. That car is beautiful.
Center exhaust, twin center exhaust in it. So if you guys haven't seen the spy photos of that, it's worth checking out because it's going to be kind of a badass car. And
just throw that emoji of me up drooling right now.
The drooling emoji. It's a 520 horsepower from the naturally aspirated engine, right? That thing's got a scream. I don't know what that's going to be.
Oh, man, I know. I can hear it right now. Oh.
That thing's going to be kind of nuts. 4-liter. Naturally aspirated, as we said, 520 horsepower. I don't know what the RPM is going to be on it, but I don't know. It's kind of cool.
Last time I was in one similar to that and I owned it was the one that I ended up selling to Jesse James, the 2003 twin all-wheel drive twin turbo.
The Porsche.
Yeah, and I love that car, but it's been, you know, 10 years since I've had one in my possession like that, except for the 92 we've got. This one, oh man, this could be the next one. I mean, absolutely gorgeous car. And the GT3, I've been in love with it, you know, since the beginning. The concept of the car itself, and now what they did to that aero package and the way that car is put together, it's absolutely drop dead gorgeous. Just my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And it's going to look badass. And just as far as performance, some of the options that we're seeing is the GT3 regular could have a manual transmission, but the RS is very likely not even going to have it as an option. It's going to be dual clutch. It's going to be the only way they're going to be able to get the performance that they need to get out of it. Of course, that's what everybody's sort of going towards. So we all know that argument. We've been down this road before. Anyway, speaking of supercars, news from McLaren as well. It's interesting because it seemed not that long ago the news about McLaren was, you know, sales have dropped significantly, something like 60%. Coronavirus hit hard for a lot of car companies, them being one of them, and, you know, struggled for some financing. Actually, we talked about, hey, well, they do have a nice building. They have a huge car collection in their museum. They can leverage that, maybe borrow against it, use that as collateral, not necessarily sell it off, but just borrow against it and say, hey, we've got and look, by the way, every time a McLaren F1 goes to auction and the price keeps getting jacked up, like, good for them, right? They
exactly.
Borrow that's quite never, a bit.
Yeah, that's never going to
just change. Based on that. So McLaren's future is they want to get away from combustion engines completely by 2030, which in 10 years, that seems aggressive. And so the next generation of McLarens are all going to be hybrid. We had the P1 and the Senna, I believe, had a hybrid powertrain, hybrid in the form of performance. They've been working on their new carbon fiber tub, their monocoque tub, and it's meant to support a hybrid drivetrain. So I don't know exactly what the specs will be or how they will differ from model to model, but expect McLaren to only have something like a 17-mile electric-only range on it. I don't think it's – you know, this isn't meant to be, you know, go 60, 70 miles on electric range. It's meant for performance and overall better fuel economy. It's going to be much more in line with what we've seen with Acura NSX than anything else, especially on their street cars or their sports cars versus their supercars. We're talking, you know, 570 and 600 series versus 720S. Interesting plans for McLaren. I don't know how many models they're going to be releasing now. It's a little like Porsche as well. Like, you know, McLaren can say, hey, we've got 12 new cars coming out. Well, what they mean is three platforms, right? Maybe 500 series, 600 series, 700 series. And then each one of those is going to have four versions of it. And I get it, two-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, hybrid this and that. You know, long tail and not and stuff. So anyway, a lot of interesting stuff from McLaren. We're big fans of McLaren. We've driven a lot of them. Just fantastic cars to drive. I would imagine they're going to be doing some cool things with this. But anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting that.
I'm sure that's going to lower the price of all their new vehicles too.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to compete. Yeah, you're right. You know, they're going to have to compete on some level with where they currently are. Like, I don't think you can take one of their cars. Let's say it's $164,000 price range or base price. I don't think the hybrid version can be $185,000. I don't think you can go $20,000 above because it just gets you out of that realm a little too much. I don't know. It's be kind of interesting, but I've been talking to Ferrari recently as well. Had a nice conversation with them the other day, just kind of talking about what's going on with them and what do they see as future plans and how do they, you know, of course, you know, they have an SUV in the works. We'll see how that plays out. Yeah, I like the
They've
idea.
They've been kind of quiet comparatively over this. pandemic? Am I correct in making that statement?
Yes, I think so. I think they would be. Also, in the U.S., they can't get any like press cars here. They don't normally have a big press fleet. So I think they only have the one car, maybe the F8, I think, is in a press fleet out here. They don't have a Portofino. They don't have a Roma. The new Roma that I think Ken Ligafelder ordered one. They don't have that, you know, so they're not being able to generate a lot of press from that right now here in the U.S. The one thing I can tell you is a few years back, my shift and steer guys, Brad Fanshaw and Aaron Hagar, we all drove up to, I think we went to Sears Point. We went to Sonoma, to the racetrack there, and we visited the Ferrari Challenge. And we actually sat down with the CEO of Ferrari North America. We had a nice interview with them. We had a nice lunch with them. Drove a Ferrari FF, I believe. I know it sounds like I'm questioning it. What I mean is I know FF. What it was. It's the FF is the hatchback, but right after that, the Lusso GTC came out, and I don't know if I drove the FF or the Lusso. I think I drove the tail end of the FF, which was nice. But Ferrari Challenge was, I don't know, 15 cars racing, and the Ferrari Challenge has now grown. The enthusiasts of that brand are buying the challenge cars, participating in that program, and they're having run groups of 30 and 40 cars, which is fantastic. So Ferrari's putting a lot more attention onto that, saying, hey, you guys are liking what we're doing. We're going to continue to grow Ferrari Challenge. We're going to do more events. We're going to make it more exciting. And listen, this is the epitome of rich man sport. You pay a shit ton of money to get the car. Yeah. You pay a shit ton of money to go racing. But they put on a nice event. And it's one of those events where you're like, hey, you're out there racing your $250,000 car amongst everybody else who's got a $250,000 car. The cars that they drive to the track in are Enzos and LaFerraris. And then there's a trailer there. And I believe all of the Ferrari Challenge cars are basically sponsored by whoever the local dealer is. And then the dealer will show up with a semi truck with however many racing cars they have. You know, let's say Ferrari San Francisco. They may have four cars or six cars or however many clients, and they're going to go up there and sort of field it for you. So it is nice to be a little bit turnkey.
It's an awesome opportunity for these guys. Let's be honest. And to say it's not competitive would be an absolute flat-out lie, because if you'll remember, I was dropped right in the middle of the field in Atlanta, Road Atlanta, for the Viper Cup.
Oh yeah,
and those guys take it as serious as can be. And you're correct; what they drive up there is much more expensive than what they're driving on the track. But what they're driving on the track is a real high level sports car. But the ability to go, be able to do that, you know, and be a weekend racer at that level is really cool,
man. Yeah, it was fun to go years ago and get sort of a glimpse of what Ferrari Challenge is in its early stages, or at least, you know, at the time when we went, and how it's grown now. So I'm going to try to work out to go into another event.
And what manufacturer doesn't do it?
Nobody's doing it like Ferrari's doing it. I don't think Ford's doing it like this with the GT. I thought Lamborghini did their Trofeo.
Lamborghini does.
And I saw something. I thought Maserati was doing their version of it. I'm not sure who's doing it at the level that Ferrari is doing it.
How about Porsche?
I would imagine Porsche is doing something like that. Yeah. And Ford has the program at Miller Motorsports Park, right? And then they do have their Mustang racing. I imagine it's still going on. There's about 30 cars that they go out there. It's much more affordable. Yeah, there's different budgets. Like, you know, I forgot what it is to do the Ferrari Challenge, but the car is like $250,000 and it costs like $100,000 to do the season of racing. Or I could be wrong. It could be $200,000, but it's not insignificant. And then, I don't know, like the Mustang racing program would be like, you could rent the car, rent the prepped Mustang and do the eight races or something like that, and it's probably about 10 or 12 grand a race, not 40 grand a race. You know, so there's different programs at different levels that allow you to do that.
It'd be nice if you didn't have to spend extra money on rebuilding your car after every race, too.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's kind of the thing. Yeah, that is kind of the thing. There's not a lot of insurance out there. So if you put the car back and if you give it back to them in one piece, then it's ready for the, you know, you're not out of pocket additional money. Other than the wear and tear stuff is usually included in all of that. But right. For Ferrari Challenge, I drove the FF around Sonoma, but then I did get in to one of the Ferrari Challenge cars and with one of Ferrari's drivers and did a few laps with them, you know, riding shotgun. And it's fun to do, and it's fun to do while you're being able to. Like, the first lap, you're kind of scared out of your mind, and then by lap two or three, you're like, so tell me about the car here and what's going on here. Like, you kind of, there is a bit of a calmness to you, and then you can start asking about the car and the track, and he's like, here, the track's rough, you can feel it, it's really kind of bumpy here, and this is where it kind of slides out, and here we kind of go all out, and then you're so fascinated with the whole idea, and that's the lap where you, like, where you get out and you go, like, man, I want to drive, I want to do that. The first one scares you. The fourth lap or third lap, you're like, man, I want to be able to do this. So anyway, it's a fun event. Talking to them was interesting. Hopefully we're going to be able to do some more stuff with them, maybe get out to one of their events. But anyway, let's tell you guys more about our friends at Dodge. Summertime is the best time to join the Brotherhood of Muscle because Dodge Power Dollars means you get a guaranteed discount. And the math is simple. You've heard us talk about it before. You get $10 off based on the total horsepower of your new Dodge vehicle. So every Dodge 2020 Challenger, every 2020 Durango, every 2020 Charger, you can go in, you can get this deal. You get the most out of your horsepower this summer. With $10 off for each horsepower, that means you can go in and pick up the Dodge Charger SRT Scat Pack. That's a badass one. It's 485 horsepower. You'll get $4,850 off on that car. And this summer, Dodge Power Dollars is back on the Dodge Durango. So when you're behind the wheel of a Dodge Durango, you're behind the wheel of a performance-driven SUV. And whether you're rolling around with friends, you'll be able to fit everyone because Dodge Durango's 7-passenger seating capacity, which is fantastic for its size and its class. By the way, that Hellcat Durango, that thing's a monster. I can't wait to get on the list to drive one of those. I keep asking my guy, hey, when are you going to send the Durango Hellcat over? I need to get a few... I need to get a few days around town with that thing. Anyway, get more power, get more off. It's that simple. Hurry into your local Dodge dealer now to take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. Speaking of Dodge Power, you got some dyno numbers. What's the latest on the twin turbo gearhead fabrications charger with the parachute and the roll cage?
Let's see. Yeah, you know, I'm getting pretty excited, man. He's going out and doing some eighth mile to make sure the puppy's ready for me to go take a testing up in Wisconsin for Speed Corps. But I think he pumped out a 1245, something like that, and over 1,000 foot-pounds of torque. It's going to be really interesting. And if you saw that clip of one of the dyno runs, it tried to jump off that dyno.
So 1245 horsepower. Do you know if he's running the 93 octane or the E85 on that one?
I think, you know, he hasn't mentioned E85, so I think it's 93.
It's 93.
Positive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not positive, but that's one of those very important details that I've overlooked to ask during this because I've been so excited.
You know, because I saw your post about it and I saw the Gearhead's post about it, and they usually say that. In their post, right? Like, if it was E85, they would say E85. So I think that's the pump gas. Well, the Texas pump gas, not our crap out here. I'm thinking of, I can't think of adjective that's not vulgar and inappropriate for the show. But so I'm pausing and I'm biting my tongue. So on the 93 octane,
can't say anything nice, don't say it.
That's fantastic. So these guys are going to take it out and do a few laps in it, run the eighth mile, kind of shake it down a little bit more before it ships up to Speed Corps.
Yeah, I don't have all the, you know, we've got the forge lines down there. We've got the HREs up at Speedcore right now, but we're not going to outfit it with the drag setup right now because we're not doing that extensive testing. So the transformation visually will be after it gets to Speedcore. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we're going to post any of the 60-foot times or anything like that. I'm not sure, but they're pretty happy with where it is. And here's the caveat throughout the whole deal. I've been really excited to follow this thing. And, you know, here I'm getting something that I'm replicating from SEMA last year and from what Speedcore's done. But it sure as hell is not the biggest beast that Gearhead is building. Because do you see? I mean, it's just like one of the other cars. I'm thinking I'm going to get some monster that's going to separate itself from the pack. It's just part of the pack because they're pumping out some cars that, you know, regularly pumping 1,200 horsepower.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but I see some comfort in that.
Definitely. There's no question there's comfort in it. But for a guy that likes to be different, right now, 90% of it is, hey, the middle of the pack is cool with the gearhead boys, because the middle of the pack there is over 1,000 horsepower, right? I mean, that's, they've upped the standard so much with what they're doing with those Hellcat motors, it's nuts. So that's nothing new to pump out 1,200 horsepower in a vehicle in their shop.
Right, but the combination of that and what Speedcore is going to do with it, that's what's really going to make the car stand out. That's what's
It's
pretty special. Speaking of Speedcore, they've been doing some posts recently. They've teased for a while the Charger. I think it's a 69 Charger, maybe 70. I think it's a 68, 69 Charger. They've teased for a while. We've seen Tantrum in the cars, that they're making one for Ralph Gilles, who's the longtime designer, head of, you know, Dodge. I know he's jumped around different brands at SRT and all that. He's, you know, he's a boss there. A nice guy. Probably
hell
been there
driver.
For a few years. Hell of a driver. He's commissioned them to build him one of these early Chargers. And I think what they're doing that they haven't done before is, if you think of a Charger as a unibody car, this is a full
chassis.
This is a full carbon fiber car. This has carbon fiber floorboards. This is a carbon fiber car, and that's fantastic. What they were doing.
Ralph,
you know,
is one lucky man. I cannot wait to
I
see
know.
This.
Also,
I mean, the power plant too. We're not. It's like we're hushing that away. You know, the elephant. I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and then is it stock elephant at that point? It's got a little something tuned into it, like. I don't know.
And, you know, it's going to be top of the notch. It's going to be way over the top.
Oh, and the other thing that's interesting is, we spoke to our friend John Urist at Hellion Turbos out of New Mexico, I believe. We talked to him a few times about what he's doing in the Ford side and on the Dodge side and on the Hellcat side, and he's really been touting compound boosting. So you take your Hellcat engine with the supercharger on it, and then also add turbos.
Turbos, yeah.
Right? And one goes into the other. And on their system, I believe the turbos would be first, and the turbos blow into the supercharger because it sits on top of the motor. It's much closer. Mm-hmm. And what it's doing is, if you imagine, I don't know, your Hellcat engine – all of the superchargers being belt driven the way they are, that eats up some horsepower, and it takes power to spin it and to keep it spinning. And if you're making 800 horsepower, and in your case, you know, well, you're doing it with turbos, but if you're making an 800 or 900 horsepower supercharged engine, I don't know what that supercharger is eating up, 80, 90 horsepower, which means you were probably making over 1,000 and you're getting to that 900 mark, the turbos take off a lot of the load off of that supercharger, right? So now we have compound boost. But also, if you think about the twin screw tube supercharger, has all of that low end torque, right? That's the low end torque off the line. That's the equivalent of McLaren doing, or let's say Acura NSX doing electric motors for the low end and then the turbo on the high end. So that turbo lag that you get is filled in, that gap, that turbo lag gap is filled in with electric motors. Compound boosting could be kind of cool because now you've got the low end torque of that supercharger before those turbos even kick in. And then when those turbos get some RPM behind them, get some exhaust flowing, it's taking the load. They're kicking in. It's taking the load off that supercharger.
It could be kind of cool. Are you kidding me?
And
I want it now.
And they're making batshit crazy numbers over there. Now, your charger, they pulled off the supercharger. They fabbed up their own intake manifold. And they're going twin turbo. And that is kind of unique. That is pretty special. But the guys, I brought up Helion because they are working with Gearhead Fabrications. And they are building compound boost systems for those guys as well.
I just got to figure out what I'm going to put it on.
And I like that they're doing that because we like the guys at Gearhead a lot, and we do like the guys at Helion a lot. I tell you, what wouldn't be out of the question is that Ram TRX Hellcat engine. We're not looking about weight, right? Because it's a big truck, and the stealth turbo system that they mount down below by the collectors, by the catalytic converters, twin
there
turbo.
You have it.
Twin turbo.
The TRX first edition.
There you go.
Great to Gearhead Fabrication.
For some compound boost.
He just made the decision for me. Whoa. See how easy that was?
Yeah, that would be so much fun.
I needed to connect two dots, and you did it for me. Thank you.
That's the perfect vehicle for it. Compound boost on that vehicle, right, because you've got a little bit of clearance and it's a little safer for the turbos. And text him, hey, got a TRX on order. I want to compound boost it. Let me know when you're done.
Well, he's getting it right after delivery. It was already going to him anyway. But what better vehicle to do that on, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great vehicle for it. Absolutely. That's a great vehicle for it.
Plus, I'm in Texas, and I got to deal with all the 1,000 horsepower Cummins around here.
Yeah. All right. Know what you're going to need. You're going to need some Geico. You're going to need some Geico insurance.
Absolutely.
Right
Everyone
now,
else will.
Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? You're never going to save money like this again. There's never been a better time to switch to Geico, and you'll save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. And I kind of feel like that's right around the time TRXs are shipping. So in October,
No.
They're going to be delayed?
A couple weeks later, yeah.
All right. Well, you can get your insurance ahead of time. Order it up by October 7th. Save an extra 15%. Just visit geico.com to learn more. All right. You send your text. We're going to wrap things up here, and we'll tune in next week. As we're here, doing this, my truck was, I was driving the truck. It was sputtering a little bit and I thought something with the engine. Luckily, no, definitely the engine's tired. I hear some noises, some ticking noises. But the Lightning has two fuel tanks, a front tank and a rear tank. It's more like on the front side and then in the rear. My front tank fuel pump went bad. Okay, I have a switch on the dash, switch to the rear tank, drive around, it's fine. But here's the hang up. The fuel pump went bad with a full tank of fuel, okay? And I was like, it's all right, I'll carry it around for a little while, not that big of a deal. But this is a return line fuel system. A lot of the modern cars don't have a return line. Instead, they throttle the voltage of the pump. So when you need a little bit of fuel, you know, they bring down the voltage. When you need more fuel, they crank up the voltage. So I have a return line. The return line on this splits to two tanks. So if you never use the front tank and the fuel pump is bad, the return line is spitting some fuel back in there. So I'm driving around and I park in a parking garage and I'm with my girlfriend. I'm like, do you smell gas? She's like, this thing always smells like gas. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. And I look and there's gas coming out of, there's fuel coming out of the gas cap. It's oozing out of the truck. And I'm like, wonder if it's a bad gas cap or it's been hot out here. Is it a pressure thing? And then I realized, no, my return line is spitting fuel in it and it's topping off to the tank more than it needs to be. And if I flick on the front fuel tank pump, it starts to sputter and it barely moves any fuel. So I can't even do that. So I rolled up this morning to the shop and I was like, you know, I can get the hand pump and I can sit here and pump that goddamn thing by hand and get 15 gallons. So what I did I drove here. My rear tank was basically empty when I got here. And I went to the shop and God bless the guys over there. I talked to Sean and Jose. And I said, hey, man, I need to get all the fuel from that front tank to the rear.
Into the rear.
I've got to go do a podcast. He's got a shelf there of all these fuel pumps. And he's like, let me see what I can do. So Sean grabbed a few pieces, handed it to Jose. He's like, test this pump. So hopefully, as I'm sitting here, those guys are doing me a favor. They just brought out a car battery, one of the high-end pumps off the race cars, so like an $1,800 Bosch fuel pump that's going to flow a mile a minute. And they just hooked up some lines. And they're just going to stick a hose in the front tank, stick a hose in the back tank, hit a battery under that fuel pump, and suck all the fuel out. And it should be done. Yeah. Also, if I went like, if I wanted to drop the tank myself or, you know, swing by, you know, maybe Galpin Autosports again and go, hey, swap a fuel pump in there. They're going to be like, great, make sure the tank is empty before you do that because they don't want to lower all that weight. So anyway, this is where I am. I'm swapping all the fuel from the front to the back because I don't want to swap out the fuel pump right now. I don't want to go through that because as soon as the new engine comes in, I'm going to have to drop the tanks and do custom fuel pumps and the whole thing anyway. And it's like, I'm going to keep throwing money at fixing this goddamn thing before I'm going to
tape an aspirin on it.
That's it. So I'm just going to drain the front tank. And when, you know, we'll see how quickly it fills up. I don't think it's going to be real quick. I don't think it's, you know, again, the return line's not bringing a lot of fuel back into the tank and it's splitting off to two tanks, right? So it's going to take a while to fill up that tank. It's not really going to be that big of a deal.
Drop it for your BMW.
Yeah. Did you see the engine pictures?
The BMW. The next show.
Yeah. Next show. BMW is looking good. I'm telling you, I'm going to list it. I know a lot of guys are asking me questions. I've been teasing it. I kind of shot myself in the foot by even teasing it because everyone's like, how many miles? How much you want? You know, thank you. I love the interest. We're getting some excitement for the car. It looks good. It runs good. But I don't know why. I'm just determined because of all the engine work and everything we've done to it. I want to be able to sell it to you guys with a dyno number. I don't care if it's a dyno jet or Mustang dyno. It doesn't matter to me. I just want to get a dyno number for it and tell you guys how much power this thing is making. I think that's the fair thing. I just don't want to be the guy that's like, I put $50,000 into this engine and it runs like a beast and it's making all kinds of crazy horsepower and then make up a number. I want a real number for you guys. So that's what I've been waiting for. My buddy Ray has been super busy with paying clients, so he can't get me in the door. And David, who works on all the Toyota Supras, my buddy over there, is trying to find some time on a different dyno possibly, but he's either working full-time or tuning the other cars. I just got to get it scheduled, and then we'll put it up there. But I want to get you guys a number. I want to come in here and tell you what that thing is making, and then
just keep dangling the carrot, man. We know what you're doing.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. Let's wrap it up. Guys, thank you so much. Until next time, let's keep the air and the spare in the bag of the wheel.
Car on the road.
The Mackie.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Guys, thanks so much for listening. Another word from our friends at Geico. It's right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money Geico can already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? You won't find a deal like this again. There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com. That's geico.com.